This is WordPress Weekly, your source for the latest news, plugins, and interviews with influential leaders in the WordPress community. Here's your hosts, Jeff Chandler and Marcus Couch.
Welcome to episode 262 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, February 8th, 2017. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by Marcus Couch.
Yes, sir.
What's happening, my main man?
Oh, just trying to survive the rainstorms.
Yeah, I heard it's raining in California.
Tons, yeah. Tons. If it only would stick, if it wouldn't evaporate, we'd be fine. But yeah, supposedly they have taken the drought status away, yet we're still paying huge money because we're in a drought. So welcome to California.
Oh, boy. And meanwhile, here in Ohio, yesterday it was 64 degrees here in February, and it was thundering and lightning. So there you go. And today, 30 degrees. So, you know, that's the Ohio weather for you. You don't like it, just wait a day. It'll change.
There you go.
So last week we had Cameron Barrett on. We talked about WordPress and education. Great show. And yes. At least two people left us some comments on the site on the show notes post where they actually went and viewed his presentation at WordCamp US, and they both have positive things to say about it. So I was happy to see that. And again, that was you know, we just scratched the surface in that show, and it'll be great to have Cameron on maybe later in the year or something to hear about progress on maybe, or get someone else on who maybe is in a similar situation on moving school districts from proprietary CMS to WordPress.
Yes, and I learned how political that whole education space is.
Oh, yeah.
Decided to not dip my toe into that one.
So we have a great guest for us lined up today. We're going to be talking about a variety of subjects, and his name is Morten Rand Hendrickson, who is a senior staff author at lynda.com at LinkedIn and the director of Pink and Yellow Media Incorporated, a digital media company based in Burnaby, British Columbia. He is also the co-creator of several startups, a co-organizer of the Vancouver WordPress Meetup Group and WordCamp Vancouver itself, and the creator of the 12x12 Vancouver Photo Marathon. And that's just a sampling of what he's involved with. But Morten, thanks a lot for taking some time out of your schedule to be with us today.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
Awesome. Glad to have you on. And so before we get started, tell us a little bit about your journey, how you initially got involved with WordPress.
Oh, man, that's a weird story. I've been in web design and development for a very long time. So I think I went through, I started with frames and layers and all those table-based layouts and everything back in the early 2000s or late 1990s. And then I migrated through a bunch of different things. I did Flash design for a long time and built fancy ActionScript-based sites and worked with AIR and all that crazy proprietary stuff. And then I kind of got really frustrated with maintaining people's websites. I was looking for a better solution. And this was around the time when content management systems were trying to get a foothold. So I cycled through Mambo and Joomla and Drupal and then all these weird smaller scale applications before landing on WordPress.
And it was kind of like post nuke, PHP nuke, dot nuke. The list goes on. All the ones that you can install from Fantastico and cPanel.
I
ended up doing.
It was there was a lot of competition at one point, and everyone would tell you whatever you picked. Someone would first tell you this is the best solution ever, and then you would start using it, and then someone else would be like, "Are you crazy? No one uses that. You should use this instead." And the thing that I very quickly learned was I could figure out how to use most of these things just fine. The challenge was handing off a project to a client because, if you build a Joomla site or a Drupal site and then you give it to a client, you have to severely restrict what they can do on the back end because doing the wrong thing on the back end of those applications can destroy everything. It's a very risky endeavor to get into the back end of them. So I was looking for this ideal platform where I could build what I wanted on the front end and then hand it to a client and they could manage it on the back end without ruining everything I'd done. And WordPress was exactly that. So back in the day, I was able to hack my way into it enough that I could control the appearance and behavior of the site on the front end. And there was nothing the site owner could do to ruin all the work that I'd done on the back end. Like, they couldn't accidentally add something that would just break the layout or whatever. So that's why I started using it. It was simply because it was made my job easier. And it was the only thing that someone without in-depth expertise in web development could understand. And that was like back in 2006, 2007, something like that.
Yeah, and that's when, you know, Saying still around, but they call it the famous five-minute install. I mean, at the time, it was WordPress was very easy to install, at least from my experience. And you'd set it up, and you had the Kubrick theme and some other default themes inside of WordPress. I remember as soon as I got over the small, well, I guess medium-sized learning curve of WordPress, because I came from. I had an extensive background with experience in Joomla.
Yep.
So WordPress was at one time foreign to me. And once I figured out PHP functions and parameters and how I could change a few numbers to alter the look and behavior of my site, it's like, that's when the light bulb hit. That's when the light bulb turned on. I said, oh man, this is good stuff. And that's when I got the WordPress bug.
Yeah, I think that's probably the experience most people have, because WordPress is in many ways a gateway for people into both web design and web development, simply because the installation process is easy enough that if you have a somewhat okay understanding of how the internet works and how you can use the web, you'll be able to set up a site. Once you've set up the site, you are able to publish regular content. So you can type in content and add some images and align it and basically work in a a web-based word processor, right? And that accessibility makes it so that pretty much anyone can use it, which meets that base requirement of we're trying to democratize publishing on the web. And then once people start doing that, they very quickly get this desire to change something, right? They want to change the appearance of an element, or they want to add an additional feature, and most people will eventually butt up against the edges of either their theme or their plugins and realize they need to do some coding. And that's when you all of a sudden have this jumpstart into web development, right? Once you click on the text editor button instead of the WYSIWYG editor button or the visual editor, and you realize you can type in markup in the editor field. And then you go, wait, can I type in markup in the widgets too? And then you find a widget that can do that. And then you go, wait, can I put PHP in a widget? And then can I just make a change to my theme? Maybe I should make a child theme. And there's this really nice stepped staircase that eases people into both design and development from WordPress, which I don't think any other platform has. And it's extremely powerful because it onboards people into the experience of fully controlling their online presence in a way that no other technology really does.
No, we talk about, and this is brought up a couple of times, and this is something I find a bit fascinating based on my experience. I've been writing and using WordPress for 7 or 8 years now, and I've never had a deep inclination to learn PHP, CSS, JavaScript. But we talk about WordPress as a gateway into these things, and by writing and using WordPress, I've been exposed and have learned things about CSS or PHP and JavaScript and some of these other languages, accessibility and all these other things that encompass an open source project, all just through WordPress. And it's kind of fascinating to me.
Yeah, you tweeted something yesterday that I found very demonstrative of the experience of working with WordPress, right? So what you had done was you wrote, I think you must have copied some content from a text editor into the WordPress content editor. So you had two lines, like a short line immediately followed by a longer paragraph. And then you highlighted the top line and you clicked on the change it to a H1 or H2. And then it changed both the line and the paragraph underneath to a heading, right? Yes. Which is an experience every single person who has ever used a WYSIWYG editor has had, where they go, why is this happening? Why I highlighted this one line. Why is everything becoming a heading? And that is kind of the, if for a lot of applications, that is the end of that conversation. It's like, oh, you did that. I guess I'm just going to like hammer on the return key until something happens. But you have no transparency in understanding why that happened. In WordPress, if you click the text editor, you can see that there's a difference between a single line that's on its own and a paragraph. And you realize that there's a relationship between that single line and the paragraph below. And then you can kind of rationalize your way into, oh, so each of the lines that you want to make into a heading needs to be a separate line. It can't just be shift return. It has to be a full return so that you get to the next paragraph. And that way you can separate each of the blocks. And that leads into understanding block level elements versus inline elements and all these kinds of things. So you know.
Yeah, I had a couple of people tell me, no, that's a bug. I go, no, that's just one of the quirks of using the editor that at some point you learn.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Marcus.
Yeah, I know. That's one of the things that bugs me too. And then you start getting into page builders and then it's like, oh God, now I got to learn something all over again. And no page builder is like the other page builder. And it's that whole end is very confusing. And then, you know, the thing that everybody then starts to realize is, what if I want to paste something from Word into WordPress? What do I do? And there was always that, you know,
paste from Word.
Yeah. That paste from Word button.
Global
right.
Destruction.
Yeah. So we've all had our trials and tribs when it comes to that editor. And I'm glad to see it, that a lot of it's getting resolved.
Yeah.
Or at least it's being worked on with the editor focus. And that's a pretty cool project I'm looking forward to. So Morten, you've created a lot of videos. You do a lot of teaching of WordPress. There's been a lot of discussion on the interwebs about whether WordPress is easy or it's not easy. I used to say it was easy. Now I think it's not something I can say anymore, because when somebody asks me about WordPress that has never used it before and I start explaining things to them, you know, 5 minutes into the conversation, I'm thinking, you know, if WordPress was this easy, I wouldn't have to, you know, spend so much hard time explaining all these different things. But through your experience of teaching WordPress, how have you seen the evolution, the learning curve, rise or fall of WordPress?
That's a really tricky question, because it has a lot of facets to it. I think if we look at a person who's never used WordPress before, and you just plunk them in front of a screen and you say, okay, here's this application, it's easy to install in your system, and let's assume they are somehow, you know, they use some sort of tool that makes it easy to install, so they're able to set the site up and it's working. Then you get them to log into the site and you just say, you give them an instruction like make a post or change the menu. And you'll see that the complexity of the application itself is profoundly confusing. And there is very little instruction in the application that tells you what to do unless you're actively looking for it. So the learning curve to make something meaningful out of a WordPress site is steeper than I think many people are aware of. And especially if you go beyond simply creating posts or pages into actually customizing the site or understanding the purpose of categories and tags, or the fact that you can make parent-child relationships between pages and what that actually does to the pages and how that is visualized on the site and how you can work with it. There's this, it's very easy to use WordPress to simply publish posts. Anything else you want to do requires some in-depth understanding of what's going on. And I think, by and large, in our community, we kind of gloss over that fact a bit and think that people are able to figure this out on their own. There's this discussion that goes on in the UX and design community all the time about whether or not there is such a thing as intuitive design. The simple answer is there is not. There's nothing you can do that is intuitive. You have to either design it in such a way that people kind of dynamically figure out what's going on, or through some sort of trial and error, figure out what's going on. But you have to provide enough context and enough information for people to figure out how pieces fit together. And you often see this in really weird things. Like if you go to a lot of WordPress sites, you'll discover that they might have 200 categories and only one post in each category. Or they'll have a post that has 80 different tags on it. And most of the tags are long strings of text. And it's kind of a symptom of lack of understanding of what is going on. And that lack of understanding is not the user's fault. It's kind of the platform's fault for not explaining it. And it's also the community and the overall just web community's fault for not remembering that not everyone was around 10 years ago when we started doing these things. A lot of people are being onboarded now, so they don't have the legacy and the history of knowing the reason why certain things are done in certain ways, because 3 years ago or 5 years ago or 10 years ago, there was this thing that needed to be solved, and we solved it with this specific tool, right? So it's my general experience is that people always appreciate, like, new users to WordPress really appreciate getting an in-depth explanation of not just how to create a post, but why a post is different from a page, and what tools they can use within the application to manage their content and how to surface content for the visitors and so on.
So this sort of, this part of the discussion sort of dovetails into the main discussion point that I brought you on to talk about, and that is your the case for WordPress telemetry proposal, which involves WordPress creating this system to so we can track and monitor usage data of specific features to help sort of create data-driven development of the WordPress application. First of all, tell us what the word telemetry means. What do we mean when you say WordPress telemetry, and sort of give us the gist behind your proposal?
Actually, most software has this now. So if you use Windows or any Adobe Suite software, or
even Firefox, I know Firefox has something called Mozilla Telemetry. It's just a lot of stats.
most applications and many plugins for WordPress have this too now, where when you install it, you'll get a question, which is, do you want to send anonymized data back to the manufacturer, developer, to help future development? And you can say yes or no. And it's... In some cases, you would say yes, because you're like, yeah, I want to contribute to the betterment of the software. In other cases, you'll be like, I don't trust you at all, so I'm just going to click no on that button. Both of which are fine. This technology, which I've labeled telemetry, some people call it telemetry, some people call it other things. They have a bunch of different names for it, is basically a method for the developer to track certain types of usage within an application and see what people do with it. So for example, if you wanted to change a feature in an application, say you wanted to figure out if the underline button in a content editor is being used by a lot of people, you could use a telemetry feature to hook into that particular function and then just count how many times people click on it. And you can do that in an anonymized way. So instead of saying, you know, I know what site you're working on, you could track it based on locales. You could say, like, a lot of people in Western Europe use the underline function, while people in Eastern North America do not, or something like that. The overall idea is just to gather data about real users and what real users are doing, because no amount of person-to-person use testing or surveys or anything else will ever give you the data you need to fully comprehend what is really going on at the hands of the user, especially now with an application that has 20 million installs worldwide. So that's the gist of it. I basically suggested we create a system within WordPress, which is opt-in at any time, that goes to a database somewhere on the web and says, what are we currently monitoring? And then monitors that type of behavior in the site, usually on the back end, to see how people are using the different features in WordPress. And then we collect that data and use it as we make decisions about future development. It came out of this ongoing conversation I keep seeing and keep having with people in when new features are being suggested or developed, which is a lot of people will bring up this 80-20 rule, the idea that we develop for the 80% of users, And then the remaining 20% will figure out some other way of doing it, either through plugins or whatever. So any feature that goes into WordPress core should be a feature that 80% of WordPress's users will find useful. And my argument has always been, that's crazy because we don't know what the 80% want. We don't know what the 20% want either. We probably only know what maybe up 1% or maybe 0.1% want, because they're the reach we have as WordPress developers into the actual user is usually limited to whoever contributes to WordPress. And a contributor to WordPress is a really rare breed of person. That's not the normal person who uses WordPress. That's a very, very dedicated person who uses WordPress, who has a fundamentally different understanding of the application and of web technologies in general than the people who we are building the application for.
So it's the telemetry is more of just a reporting basis to get a more accurate synopsis of how the users actually interact with the installation. Am I right?
Yeah.
So listeners, that's the difference between Amazon taking all the data that you use while you browse and all the products you look at versus calling you on the phone going, hey, what do you like to look at on Amazon?
Yeah, except it's not tied to any profile. So like when Amazon does that, what they're doing is they're saying, I want to know everything you're doing on Amazon so I can market to you something else. Whereas telemetry would be, I want to know what every user is doing in terms of clicking on buttons, but I have no interest in what the individual user is doing. So I'm just looking at patterns, right? And it's a really important point, is this has to be anonymized. There's no practical reason why it should be tied to any specific user, but actively making it anonymized ensures that there's no possible way that, you know, people with nefarious intent can somehow abuse this feature.
And in doing research for this, Microsoft, Mozilla, the Chrome team, and a lot of other software providers have spent a lot of resources and time creating, if they haven't existed already, creating these methods of removing unique identifiers from the code in order to be able to track this data. A lot of these companies have taken the privacy aspects of usage reporting systems like this very seriously.
Yeah, and you know, especially in today's world where big data is becoming such a big thing, making sure that this data is collected in an ethically responsible way is paramount. And that was in my original ticket. I think that was one of the requirements, that number one, the data must be anonymized before it leaves the user computer. So there has to be no way to track any behavior back to an individual user. If we can meet that requirement, then we can start exploring the rest of it. And then in addition to that, I also suggested that all this kind of monitoring needs to be done at an opt-in level, meaning the functionality itself should not actually live in WordPress core. It should live in some sort of plugin that gets either pulled into core or removed from core based on opt-in, so that if you are setting up a WordPress site and you have no interest in partaking in this, you opt no, and then there is no functionality in the application itself that can do this. So there's no risk, or people can't be concerned about, oh, but what if someone is secretly monitoring what I'm doing? That's simply not possible, because the code base is physically removed from the application. And I think introducing something like this, it solves a couple of problems. It solves my problem, which is the origin, which is we need to know more about how people use WordPress so that we can develop it. It also solves this other problem that Heather Burns brought up, which is there are new regulations coming into play in Europe especially, and probably in other countries too, that require applications that gather any data about usage to explicitly tell the user that is going on. Now, WordPress currently collects very limited data, things like version number and some other minor things. And even those small pieces of data are technically covered under this new legislation, which is coming into play. And WordPress technically is required to notify users about this data collection. It's currently not doing it. And it's not entirely clear what exactly WordPress is collecting, other than it's not anything important. But those, by separating this out into a separate plugin, making it an opt-in feature, we're resolving any potential legal issues with privacy concerns and disclosure.
So I know you created the proposal. I think it was, when was it? It was back in December.
Yep.
And we recently wrote about it on the Tavern. Mm-hmm. I know you created a ticket on track, which is generally the thing that is suggested for people to do, that if you have a suggestion to improve WordPress and you've thought it through or have a proposal, put it on track and, you know, let's see where the discussion goes. And there's a couple people who chimed in here, and then the project lead this year for WordPress, Matt Mullenweg, he chimed in and said that he realized that it was discussed in October. Mm-hmm. But the proposal is off the table for this year, as it is not within the three core focus areas.
Yeah.
But if after 2007 it is considered, it says there's no part or current, there is no part of current or potential WordPress development that is being held back by the lack of this existing, as there are easy and current ways to answer questions with data to the extent it would inform our decisions, which is not something I entirely understand in terms of, well, you know, where the data is coming from. Is he talking about surveys, or is he talking about obtaining data for specific tickets or specific changes to core? I'm not sure, but we know that your proposal is off the table for this year.
Yeah, this is what's fun about doing development in general and working on the web, which is an open and democratic, or somewhat democratic system, or some sort of idea of a democratic system where anyone can propose whatever they want, right? I could propose renaming WordPress to Catfish or whatever, and it would, you know, it would be shot down, but you could, right? And you would have an open discussion about it. And it's really interesting to pitch in tickets about important subjects just to surface a conversation about it, if nothing else, to see that, you know, this is addressed in a proper way. Now, for this ticket, it's kind of interesting because I was not aware of this conversation that happened in October about telemetry, because that happened in Slack, and Slack is kind of a big monster, and if you're not paying attention right as it happens, it just drowns. Yeah. I did go back and read some of the logs, and that conversation touches on the same subject, but in a very different context. But I can see how, like, back then it was discussed and it was shut down mainly due to lack of resources. Like, no one wants to or has time to work on it. And also, there wasn't an immediate need felt for this feature to be introduced. Matt's argument that this falls outside the scope of the current three focus areas, I disagree with on really strong fundamental grounds. I feel, my personal opinion is that any change that's done to the WordPress interface needs to be data-driven. And if that's the case, then this project falls squarely inside the customizer project, simply because the customizer is being changed without data to back it up, which then leads to the question we're asking, which is, if Matt says there is current data available, what exactly is that data? I've asked around and discussed this with a couple of people. Basically, the data consists of separate data sets. Some of it comes from WordPress.com, which does a lot of tracking of use. It also comes from some third parties. Like, there are some hosts that do some tracking of specific behaviors, and there's also some plugins and theme developers that do similar things. I would venture to say the WordPress.com data is more or less irrelevant, because the WordPress.com user interface is so fundamentally different from self-hosted WordPress at this point.
Yeah, and WordPress.com, like, here's a great example of why this type of data would be great in the WordPress.org software itself is WordPress 4.7 removed the justify and underline buttons from the editor. And there was a lengthy discussion on the ticket that lasted quite a few months, or it might have been more than a year or so when the initial ticket was created. But throughout that discussion, there were questions of, well, do we have any user data that tells us, you know, how often this button is being used? Or is there any way we can gauge the impact of that removing these buttons would have on the user base? And the only data that was available was partial data from WordPress.com, but that data was sort of it was sort of mixed up because there's more than one editor that you could use that interfaces with WordPress.com. So it really wasn't the best type of data you could have to make that decision on. And outside of that, there really was no data, you know, to make your decision on regarding removing buttons from the interface. Now, you know, the buttons were eventually removed due to other factors like underline. One of the issues was accessibility with determining what a link is and the justify that it's really wasn't necessarily needed anymore. It was for the days of print. But, you know, as a good example, and it was Andrew Oz, who is the component maintainer for TinyMCE, which is the editor, the library that powers the visual editor in WordPress. It was nice to see him step up and say, you know, it'd be great to be able to have this kind of data to help make better informed decisions when it comes to the interface. And he created a small plugin and just did, you know, it was very limited amount of user testing, but just from that small sample set, he was able to see just from that people were clicking the button to show the kitchen sink, and then they wouldn't hide the extra buttons after that. They wanted to see them all the time, and that was something. Mm-hmm. That was just a result that he found surprising, and you know, it's just a wonder of, well, what could we find? What kind of pain points or surprising results could we find with this type of usage data and tracking was available on a grander scale throughout WordPress.
This is exactly the point that for all the people who are actively involved in the WordPress community, be that contributors, be that people who show up at WordCamps or meetups or write blog posts or just teach other people how to use it, any active contributor to the WordPress community is more or less an edge case to the overall WordPress user, because they are better informed about the application and they use the application in different ways from the overall mass of people who use the application. I like to say we know nothing about the real user of WordPress. That's simply because when user testing is done for WordPress, it is usually done on people who are either WordPress experts or know someone who is. And it's not done in a truly scientific way, which is completely impartial, large sample sizes. In our case, there should be sample sizes that are distributed across the globe. And we don't have the data. So what's happening is we are kind of treating WordPress as if we are still living in the world of 10 years ago, where WordPress is built and maintained by the people who use it, right? This is the standard open source problem that any open source project starts with a few dedicated people who build an application for themselves. Then the application is successful enough that other people start adopting it. You try to recruit those people into the process, but eventually it'll grow big enough that the majority of users are not involved in the process anymore. And that at that point, the argument that you are building WordPress for yourself falls to the wayside. However, the people who are involved are usually so invested in that mode of thinking that they will counter that question by saying, well, if someone has something to say, they should just contribute. Which is a ridiculous statement for something as big as WordPress, because the majority of people who use WordPress, and I can tell you this based on empirical evidence, the majority of people who use WordPress never go to the WordPress forum. They never go to a WordPress event. They never talk to anyone else who uses WordPress. They just use it in whatever setting they are in because that's what they're handed. They have no interest in going to, I'm sorry to say, like the WP Tavern or my courses or anything else. They're just using the application as if it was anything else on their computer. I've even seen people who are not even aware they're publishing content to the web. They are working in some sort of third-party editor, and then that gets automatically sent over to WordPress, or they log into this thing on the internet that's been branded so that it doesn't look like WordPress, and they just type in content and it publishes. That's the person we're designing the application for. And I know people hear that and they go, no, it's not. We're designing it for these people who use WordPress. That
sounds like a difficult person to develop software for.
Well, that's the thing, though. That is the actual person who uses WordPress. Just from scale, that's the person we're designing the application for. We're designing it for the people who just go, I need a website. I'm just going to bang something up here. This thing is what my friends are talking about. Click, 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 click. And then they do a bunch of crazy stuff, right? That is the target audience of WordPress. If it's something else, then we need to change the application and how we sell it. And we have very little information about how those people work simply because we're actively not pursuing them. were not doing the work to find information about them. And the telemetry proposal is a way of bridging that gap to say, maybe, we don't know, but maybe there's a lot of user data out there that would inform our future decisions about how we redesign the application. But unless we have that data, we can't know if it's valuable or not. So when people say, well, you know, we know what people are doing, that's not true, but sure, you can believe that if you want to. However, that's not an argument against collecting user data. That's just an argument for collecting more user data, right? Because if you think you know what's going on, you need to empirically test it to make sure your preconceptions match with reality. So the pushback that I got from this telemetry project on, not on technical grounds, but on we don't need this, quite frankly, disturbs me. Because if we don't know anything about the people who use the application and we start making dramatic changes to it, or if we tell ourselves that we are doing things that are good for the end user, but we don't know the end user, it's kind of self-deception and it might easily damage the application without us even knowing it.
Yeah, I think a good litmus test for just proving the fact that we don't have a lot of user data is by looking at what versions are installed out there. Mm-hmm. And we've all seen these charts where it's like about half of the WordPress installations out there are using old versions. So that's how disconnected, I guess you could say, that developer or user of WordPress on those installations is. And that's our gap. That's what we're fighting. If you look at the most recent security revision, unless a host did it automatically, I bet you that 80% of WordPress installations out there have not upgraded to that.
Yep. And I have probably around 100 sites spread over a bunch of different places that I run to monitor things. And only 40% of them were auto-updated to the latest update. And two of them were targeted by this REST API exploit. It's very interesting to watch when you're like, this is a garbage website and it's literally just up there to get hacked. But at the same time, you realize if that was a real site and just the extent of this incursion was quite traumatic and would have been horribly damaging. And, you know, there are all these conversations that have been had over the last couple of years about auto updates and forced updates and all these kinds of things. And you keep hearing this argument come back again and again, which is hardcore developers say, I don't want forced updates in WordPress because I do crazy things and they break my crazy things, right? And then that's used as an argument to hold back on that type of feature. Well, in reality, the vast majority of users will not be aware that there's a security issue unless they are explicitly told, probably will not have the ability to update a site that they have access to because they need to go through some sysadmin that's responsible for the actual update, and will have a hard time communicating an issue to that sysadmin because that person might not know much about WordPress either. That's the target audience we need to address. And you know, these push updates and everything else are addressing those needs. But the pushback comes from the very rare user who sees WordPress as their own personal playground that should suit their needs rather than the overall group of users. And this kind of brings up this, I think, you know, this is a controversial statement and people are going to get super pissed for me saying this, but whatever. I piss people off all the time. So I think what needs to happen is the WordPress community as a whole needs to change the way it thinks about WordPress. It's not actually a tool that we build for ourselves anymore. It used to be, but it isn't. It's now a tool we build for the other people that are using it that we don't necessarily know. That means any pet feature that you want to jam into WordPress, unless you can prove that that feature is something that the vast majority of WordPress users can benefit from, then it shouldn't go in there. And any argument that I think this is best for people or I think people would use this simply doesn't hold up.
I went to 10 WordCamps and 5 people at each one of those WordCamps told me they wanted the feature. So that means all users want it.
Yes, exactly. And it goes further to say like, well, I tested it on 10 people and they all had no problem doing this. And then you ask, who are these 10 people? Well, it's qualitative user studies, right? You can do that. That's fine. If you work in an iterative process, that's not a problem. The issue is that's the kind of stuff you do when you are in the beginning, in the infancy of a project. WordPress is, 12 years old and has millions and millions of users? We can't have an iterative process based solely on qualitative testing. we have to have quantitative testing simply because the user base is too large. And by not collecting this data, we're doing ourselves a disservice because we're not building an application that fits with what people actually need, and we're not resolving their issues. And we're also kind of limiting our possibilities, because what if it turns out tracking user data uncovers things we didn't know? Maybe there's user patterns we weren't aware of. Maybe a lot of people do things a certain way that may end up simplifying the process.
Maybe all of the assumptions that we've made in the past 13 years of WordPress development are proved wrong.
Well, unlikely. I think the majority of assumptions we've made will probably be correct. And then we'll have
I was just joking with that. But
yeah, this is a legitimate, right. This is a legitimate concern people will bring up, right? So I think the majority of decisions that have been made will be proven correct. However, there's also probably a large number of pain points that we're not aware of. And there are large areas where we can improve the application that we simply are not conscious of, because the majority of people who work with WordPress have been in the application for so long that they know the history of why things are the way they are.
And getting this data would get data. It would be important data, but it'd be getting it from people, from these usage statistics. It would give us insight into specific things that we could do more detailed user testing on. Mm-hmm. We're always getting this. I personally like to see a telemetry system in WordPress, because we'd be getting data from the horse's mouth, so to speak. When it comes to decision making in WordPress, having WordPress.com as a data point is okay, but having it be the only place where, well, that's the only data we have to make this decision on, or the decision is made based on that data, is a scary prospect for WordPress.org. Now, I don't think that has happened. I really hope it doesn't happen, but just relying only on WordPress.com, because that's the only data we have, especially when it comes to the user interface parts of the WordPress project, is it seems like a recipe for good things not happening.
Yeah, and it's also not necessarily relevant data to self-hosted WordPress, both because WordPress.com's user base, this is purely me guessing here, but I'm willing to guess the majority of users on WordPress.com are primarily bloggers. Whereas the people who use WordPress as a self-hosted application are likely using it more as a content management system. In addition, we previously discussed how the WordPress.com user interface is fundamentally different from what we have in self-hosted sites. Now, of course, you can co-opt that experience by installing something like Jetpack and Calypso and all that stuff, but I don't think the majority of WordPress users do that. So that data is interesting to WordPress and interesting to certain types of use patterns. For instance, things like whether or not people justify text or underline text. But in the larger context of how people use WordPress as a self-hosted application, it's more or less irrelevant. Someone asked me to come up with examples of where we could use data. And I was thinking of a ton of different things. Like, one thing is new features that are added into WordPress core should be tested against actual use. So once a new feature like custom CSS in the customizer is introduced, we should actually run stats on whether or not people are using that feature. Mm-hmm. Right? My guess is that feature will be ignored by the vast majority of users, because it requires a really high level of understanding of how a really deep understanding of how a website works, and also how the customizer works. Because if you don't know CSS well, and you don't know how HTML markup works, and how you can use the browser tools in the browser to target elements and then experiment with CSS, that feature is unavailable to you. It's very much a front-end developer feature that's cobbled into WordPress core, and for the majority of users will likely be either irrelevant or just a tool that you can use to break things.
Another example, post formats. I just wanted to bring that up during the show.
Oh my God. Yeah, no, I'm not even going to touch that. I've written so many articles about that now. It's a good example of a feature that was introduced that aimed to solve a problem that I'm not sure was there to begin with. And then the way it was implemented was not communicated in an efficient enough way for people to adopt it. So now it's this legacy feature that we can't remove because it might break things, but has no real functional purpose.
And since then, there really hasn't been any renewed effort to get post formats to be it's like an unfinished product in WordPress that is, I found, is actually kind of hard to explain to users. Hey, what are these post formats? Well, if you select and this, your post will magically turn into this. And you can
see how the adoption of post formats in WordPress core themes has dropped to pretty much zero. So whereas in, 2013 had very aggressive integration in post formats, 2017 has post formats, but I don't think they do anything. Or they might add a little icon to post, but that's it. At which point you have to ask the question, adding those icons probably does nothing except confuse the end user who visits the site, because they'll go, why is there an icon here and not on the other thing, right? So a lot features like that could benefit from a proper beta testing program. This is a different ticket I also filed, which is to surface beta testing in WordPress in a different way so that people who use WordPress on a regular basis are aware they can join a beta tester program and then actually actively collect feedback from those people when they are in the beta test rather than just have beta tests for developers. And I can see how, you know, for instance, a feature like custom CSS could have been shipped out in a beta tester program on a large scale, and then you can monitor how many people use it and how they use it and whether or not they would enter CSS into the editor and then try it and then delete it again and never use it, which is probably what happens most of all, and then use that data to decide whether it should be baked into the application as a whole. That's how most software is developed on a large scale, and I think that's kind of the model we need to move towards, where instead of having just the core community test things, have the actual users at the other end of the pipeline test things and make sure they fit with their programs. And I also think shipping a proper beta testing program along with telemetry would provide an inroad for a lot of people who maybe are not aware that they can contribute to WordPress or haven't figured out how they can provide value to the WordPress project. They'll see a new inroad through this program. So there are a lot of pieces that could come together here to give us make us far more informed about what we're doing, but it requires a different mentality around the idea of actually building features not based on what we want, but based on what is good for the end user.
And, you know, for future WordPress development, this whole telemetry proposal in this discussion, I would read these posts on the Make blogs about certain new features that are being developed that have a possibility of being added to core. And now I want to question everything with, well, where is the data that backs up that this would be a good addition to core?
Yeah, that's what
I kind of equate this to sort of an MRI view of what WordPress is doing rather than an X-ray. Sure, an X-ray you can tell a little bit, but you can't go layer by layer and you can't look at individual things. So I think this has a lot of validity to it. And personally, right after the media library gets fixed, I'd love to see this go.
In my original proposal, I kind of stipulated a functional model for it where I said there should be the telemetry should always collect certain base parameters for use that have to be defined by someone smarter than me. But in addition, there should be an ability to put in a temporary telemetry on certain features. So for example, when there's talk of changing some specific behavior within WordPress, adding a new feature or removing a feature or moving a feature, doing something that's new that we currently could collect data on, there should be a way for the core team to say, well, you know, we're working on the customizer right now, and we need to know if people are using drag and drop behaviors to reorganize the menu or if everyone is using the buttons, right? And we also need to see if when people add new buttons into the menu, every single button will always end on the bottom. Are people then moving the button, or are they deleting other buttons to move it back on top? Like, just monitor how people are using that menu feature. if the telemetry feature had the ability to then say temporarily, so over, let's say, 2 months, we're going to monitor everyone and how they interact with a specific feature and collect that data, and then maybe tie it to geographic location. So you say, like, separate Asia from Europe or Europe from North America or something like that. That would give us targeted data for a specific use in a limited time frame, so that we're not like pulling down an enormous amount of data from every WordPress site all the time, but instead we're just pulling down the data that's currently relevant to what we're doing. And you know, there are standards for doing this. This is not new. This is something that a lot of applications and a lot of software companies do already. We just have to implement it, but that requires that will to do it and the acceptance that database development actually makes sense. And I think we're still stuck in that phase of, we don't want database development because we don't need it. And I wonder if that's because deep down, at least some people are thinking, what if the data comes back and tells me that I can't do the thing that I actually want to do, right? And that it gets suppressed. And then people are not allowed to work on the things they want to work on, or the things they want to work on never go to fruition, and then they abandon the project, and then there's a concern of losing developers, right? So there's a whole mindset problem here, I think, that needs to be addressed, which is really hard to get at because it feels like it goes against the grain of what open source development is. Well, in reality, it is the very core of open source development is building things for the people who use them. Just remember, it's not us.
And you know, I read a lot of stuff involving WordPress, and sometimes I'll read something that's like, when I read your proposal and I read this statement that, you know, we don't even know, you know, what features the 80% or even the 20% of WordPress actually use, you know, we can't even really base anything off of that rule. My mind was blown, Morten. You know, it's a real, it really gives me pause for thought and realizing, well, you know, what's the 80%? We don't even know.
Yeah. I think the worst part about that is we don't even know who the 80%, like, what does the 80% even look like?
Yes.
We just keep these numbers, right? Like, WordPress has, what is it, 27% of the top million
sites on Alexa,
which tells you nothing about anything about the majority of sites on the web, because the top million sites on Alexa is a drop in the bucket of what is on the web, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
And if you go to the web and you just search for some of the text in the original, like, you know, the Hello World post in WordPress, mm-hmm. if you just search for the string of text in the paragraph in the Hello World post on Google, you'll get like a bazillion returns. So there are a lot of websites on the web that have that Hello World post indexed on Google. And you don't know if like half of those sites, that's it. That's the sole content of that entire website.
We're gonna quickly wrap things up here, but I also want to say that there has actually been some buy-in or some interest from WordPress core developers on developing a system like this. I know I asked one the other day. I said, "Hey, you know, during the time that you led a WordPress release, could you have had or benefited from having this type of usage data?" And they said, "Yes, absolutely." And I said, "Well, when could it have come in handy?" And they said, "All the time." So, I mean, it would definitely, there's definitely some buy-in here from WordPress core developers, even some who have led release cycles. And, you know, the proposal is on the shelf for now, but I'm looking forward to seeing it be revisited and discussed in the sooner rather than later, because I think it would be amazing too, just for me, for curiosity's sake, if all that data, you know, is anonymized and put onto the web, you know, it's public. So just to see some of the trends that come up, I think would be mm-hmm. very interesting.
And just so it's said, I know that, you know, the way that I'm presenting this, it sounds like everyone is like very against it and don't want data. I know people want data. I think the big challenge here, it's a two-pronged challenge. One is, who's going to build it? Because we're an open source project. Everyone works on what they want to work on. And at the moment, I don't think there's enough brain power available. Like, people who could be working on it are locked up in other projects. And the people who maybe should be working on it are not interested in working on it. The other side of it is simply that there's a, it requires a change in mindset to accept that we're going to do data-based development. It's something that a lot of people are fundamentally against because they don't want to be told what to do. They want to do what they want to do. And that's a larger conversation that needs to be had in the overall community and a philosophy that maybe need to change. But like you said, there are a lot of people who are in support of this. It's more like, yes, I want it, but how exactly are we going to make this happen, seeing as we need people to work on it over a long period of time and invest heavily in it? And, you know, in the balance of priorities, it might be, it feels like it's better to just tweak things and make it shinier. But that doesn't, that just pushes the problem forward and might potentially make everything worse accidentally. So,
yeah. I have hope. In some bizarre way, I'm in my head thinking, what if they did telemetry from day one? What would have changed in WordPress?
And it's funny you bring it up, Marcus, because I was thinking the same thing the other day. You know, what would WordPress look like today if it was data-driven, if it was developed, you know, based on data?
I think that Hello Dolly would not exist because you would have seen that everyone deleted it. But or maybe even Akismet. I don't know. You know, what? And then here's another thing. What's the very first plugin somebody installs?
Yes. And how many plugins do people install and then abandon, and are there patterns to it?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Man, wow, this is like a Back to the Future moment. I'm trying to envision the world differently.
Well, I want to, man, what a great conversation. What a great idea, Morten. Like I said, I hope it gets revisited sooner rather than later. And we'll just have to see what comes of it. So if anybody out there wants to follow you on Twitter or stalk you or do that, or even check out some of your courses on lynda.com. How can they do that?
I'm on Twitter at Morten. That's M-O-R-1-0 because that's my name. You can talk to me there. I'm always on Twitter. You find me on LinkedIn. I publish posts on LinkedIn every week now about interesting things I found on the web, which are worth reading. You can also find me on the LinkedIn Learning blog occasionally. I have a website at morten.com, and that's mor10.com. And I have the courses that are on lynda.com are also on linkedinlearning.com. So it just depends on, or linkedin.com/learning. So you just pick whatever platform you want. It's the same courses. We have lots of exciting stuff coming out. I had the new version of my underscores course came out yesterday or the day before. And I have a series of courses on the REST API rolling out this year. So there's always exciting things. But yeah, but
I'm over here doing a facepalm because your name is Morten. Your domain is Morten. I just got it. Oh, boy, do I feel. Let me tell you.
Well, I want to take just a moment to reflect and say thank you, Morten, for all of that you do in the tutorial space, because I myself personally have learned a lot from some of your tutorials, some of your advanced stuff. And you know, you're probably responsible for thousands of people that have stuck with the WordPress platform. So I just want to say thanks for your contribution in that. And, you know, today's show was a real eye opener in terms of, you know, looking at what's possible. And anybody that watched the Super Bowl last weekend sees that Squarespace and Wix and all those other guys are putting out big money to compete mm-hmm. with WordPress. So we've got to be smart in how we use this platform. But I want to thank you for coming on today. It's been a total pleasure for both Jeff and I.
I truly appreciate the opportunity.
Awesome. So there you have it. Great interview with Morten Rand Hendrickson. Definitely you should check him out and follow him on Twitter. Very smart gentleman, if I do say so myself. And he's a big advocate for accessibility. We didn't even get into that part, but he's one of the big advocates for improving WordPress's accessibility. And we'll have to have him on again to dive into that and some of the other aspects of WordPress, especially from the user point of view. Marcus, there's a couple. I guess we should. I could quickly roll through the news items if you want.
Yeah, let's go.
If you use WP Supercache, make sure you update it to 1.4.9 because it patches multiple cross-site scripting vulnerabilities. Now, the vulnerabilities are only in the settings page in the admin, so the severity here is not as high as, you know, not overly concerning, but you should still update regardless. And the update also includes multiple bug fixes as well. Let's see. Blog Vault, if you use Blog Vault, there's a chance that your site may have got malware injected into it. Apparently over the weekend, last weekend, Blog Vault, which is a real-time backup and migration service, announced that it suffered a security breach that exposed some customer data. So some customer sites that use the service were accessed without authorization and were infected with malware. All backups that were generated by the service are considered safe. Now, FTP, login credentials, payment-related data is all safe. The service doesn't store credit card information as payments are processed through Stripe. Now, they've carried out a series of security precautions. They're doing, a deep analysis of their systems. They've upgraded the plugin to 1.45. They've reset all passwords for customer accounts. And they're also helping to clean sites of affected customers. And they're currently doing an investigation. So you want to check out the blogvault.net site for more information as it becomes available. And last but not least, we discussed WordPress 4.7.2 on last week's show. We talked about how it was the security release. Well, it turns out that in addition to the security fixes in that release, there is a critical issue that was we essentially didn't know about at the time. It was a delayed disclosure of the vulnerability, but it was a unauthenticated privilege escalation vulnerability in a REST API endpoint, which allowed people to kind of deface a website, edit a post. Turns out that this issue is directly related, of course, to the WordPress REST API. So we're talking about WordPress 4.7, 4.7.1. If your sites are running those versions, you are at risk of this particular vulnerability. Now, I know that the security team has said that they saw exploits in the wild less than 24 hours after the disclosure. So far, the attacks are defacements. In fact, some of the white hat security people out there are defacing websites saying, update your WordPress or you will be hacked. So there's some people out there who are using this for good, I guess if you could say that. But there are a ton of websites out there that are being defaced simply for this REST API. And it's caused some angst among quite a few people as well, because they're just now learning about this REST API that was added to WordPress. It's enabled by default, and they have no clue as to what it is, how it works, or why they even want it. And it's the reason why their site is defaced. So there's quite a few discussions out there on whether the REST API should be enabled by default or if it should go back into a plugin. We'll have to see what happens there. But if you're running 4.7 or 4.7.1, please update as soon as possible before one of these hacking groups gets a hold of your site, because they're already using automated scanning tools and exploiting the crap out of all these sites. So dangerous stuff there.
Yeah, and they're not doing any good out there. It's not like they're going to fix your CSS for you. Oh, look, Jeff's site's messed up. Let me fix that for him. No, yeah. That's not the way.
Yeah, and unfortunately, if you're using the like a plugin like InsertPHP or the PHP code widget, this vulnerability can lead to remote code execution. So it could lead to simple defacement could lead to something much more malicious. So definitely update to 4.7.2 as soon as possible. Is pretty much the message here I'm trying to tell you.
And this sounds like something telemetry would be able to notice too. Like, okay, if the site is getting logged in and X screen is being changed all the time, maybe we got some security issue coming around, you know? That might be something.
Yeah. It also brings up a really important side note on this whole issue of what the real user does. The things like the REST API, when they're rolled out, I don't think they're properly explained to people. There's a very big new feature that gets rolled out on the back end of WordPress that has an impact on a lot of people, but they're not fully, the purpose of it is not fully explained. And you end up getting all these really strange conversations floating around on the internet that are never addressed. So in relation to this whole security breach of the REST API conversation, there was a lot of people that were saying, well, we should disable the REST API by default. And that's a conversation I've been involved in many times. It's a conversation that I keep seeing pop up all the time. So to surface the conversation, because I know there's been a lot of discussion about it in the core team, I filed a ticket on WordPress to say disable the REST API solely for the purpose of getting the discussion out in the open so people can see the reasons why it's on by default. And I also provided a practical method for doing it that wouldn't destroy things so that the core developers who are involved couldn't simply say, no, we need it. They have to explain why and why even disabling it at a certain level would cause a problem. And I think just overall, WordPress has a bit of a communication issue with that because a lot of the decisions that are made are either not communicated at all or are not communicated sufficiently for the end user to understand what is going on and why something that may look like it's dangerous might actually be good for their site, even in the light of an exploit like this.
Yeah, I mean, the REST API, a lot of people are like, REST API, what's that? All I know is it got my site hacked.
Which is sad because REST APIs have been around for a very long time.
Yes. So with that, Marcus, why don't we jump into the plugin picks of the week?
All right. I got three good ones here for the plugin picks of the week. First one is called Content Locker. And we've seen some things like this out there in the wild. You get visitors to pay or for their like and share something.
Uh-oh. Is it just me or is his audio cutting out?
Yeah, no. Someone's censoring him.
Oh no, man. He gets to the best part of the show according to some of our listeners and his audio drops out. So no. Marcus, try disconnecting and then reconnect. And there he goes. All right, so he did that. Hey, since you're still here, it would be a little bit of bonus content, but I like how you said that you brought the issue to light and you had a practical reason. You created the issue on track and made it so that there would be a public discussion. I like that. That's a good technique.
Yeah, I think that's something that it's a method for surfacing a conversation that needs to be had. I also think, sometimes just bringing these issues up requires some rethinking of what is going on so that people have instead of just saying, this is good, someone comes in and says, actually, there are all these edge cases that are really bad. What about them? And is there another way of doing it just to challenge it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we often use that flying cars reference for the REST API. We think of it as flying cars. Other people that get their stuff defaced may think of it as cars are falling from the sky.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's it. All right, let me continue here. I'll start again with the plugin picks of the week. First one is called Content Locker. It is a tool that can transform things for your business, take stuff to the next level. You get them to pay either by liking, sharing, or signing up to your content, and it increases your engagement level on those different social sites. Now, a case for this would be perhaps you have a coupon or a promo code. If you have a store, you could make it so that they could get that discount, but they would have to like your site from either Facebook or Twitter or whatever. So check it out. It's really nice. Content Locker. The next one reminds me somewhat of WordPress multi-site. This is called WP Jump, and all it does is add some bookmarks into your admin bar that you set up ahead of time, and it just gives you a shortcuts to go to your next site's WP admin. So that's really all it does is it's just a handy bookmark bar. So if you want to cruise through a bunch of different sites that you have and look at the back end, that's a great way to do it. It's called WP Jump. And I used this one just the other day. I was using a theme that had a home sidebar and also a page and post sidebar. And I wanted to copy from one to the other, and it didn't really do it too well. So I downloaded this plugin, Sidebar Content Clone. And it allows you to clone all widgets from one sidebar to another sidebar just by clicking on it. Really handy, saves a lot of time, especially if you're doing a bunch of different widgets that have custom settings on them. Perhaps they're showing different posts from different categories and things, and you don't want to have to go through and do all that a second time. This one does it for you. Sidebar Content Clone. And those are my plugin picks of the week.
Awesome. So that's going to do it for this week's edition of WordPress Weekly. You can find show notes for this episode and all previous episodes on WPTavern.com. You can follow me on Twitter at JeffroGeFFR0. And Marcus?
You can find me at my website, MarcusCouch.com, and on Twitter at MarcusCouch.
Until next week, everybody enjoy the rest of your week. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday afternoon. So long.